you'd like, actually, you can go to our What's the Deal radio.
Again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car repair. We're going to talk about all kinds of car stuff. And sitting next to me is my wing lady.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. And it's my wife of 742 years.
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? Some days.
Yeah.
I love that intro because it is so perfect for you. Jeremy knows you well.
Oh, the one that says, if you agree with Mark, seek professional help.
Exactly.
It's been said before. I think that's where he got it, but it's been said before. Yes. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem, 602-508-0960. I'm going to tell you a success story.
Okay.
There was this guy that had a Beamer, and he took it in because it was blowing water or a mist or a white smoke out of the air conditioning vents. So he took it in to a shop, and they told him he needed an evaporator. Now, the evaporator is the cold part of your air conditioning. It's positioned in front of the passenger underneath the windshield. Behind the evaporator is a fan. Mm-hmm. So when you want air conditioning, we turn on the fan, we open up the vents as you ask for, and we blow a fan across this ice-cold, what looks like a radiator. Okay, with me?
Got it.
So anyway, they give him a $1,600 estimate to replace the evaporator in the case. The $1,600 might be a little high, might be a little low, I don't know. It is a big job. You take the dashboard out from the left to the right. You take the seats out. And then you take all the console and you take the steering column. I mean, you have to take it. If people could see their car in that state of disassembly, they would just have a fit.
I think we've posted one or two of those on Instagram. It's pretty crazy.
It is. And most of the guys that work on cars, they know to put the bolts here and the bolts there. A lot of guys will put the bolts back where they got them. Mm-hmm. That way it's easy to determine. But the biggest fear is you got it all done and you got three extra bolts.
Or you got a noise, yeah.
Yeah, or you got a noise caused by the three extra bolts.
Yes.
So it's that kind of an issue. But anyway, $1,600. He takes it to Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Tells him the same symptoms. Bob verifies the symptoms. There are drains at the bottom of this case because the evaporator on the air conditioning side sweats water. Just like in your refrigerator and freezer. So Bob goes underneath the car, and there's two rubber drains. So he sticks a coat hanger in one, and water comes out. So he sticks a coat hanger in the other, and water comes out. So then he gets a vacuum cleaner and starts sucking on them, and pretty soon there's a bunch of water comes out. I think the bill on this for the diagnostic and everything else, and then they clean the drains up, and I think they clip the ends of them off, because usually the ends have a flapper, kind of a flat thing where the ends together.
Okay.
That way animals can't crawl up. Nobody cares about animals. Mm-hmm. Besides, if they can crawl up that tube, they're not going to be biting on anything.
I was going to say, they'd have to be awful small.
It's about the size of a pencil or maybe bigger.
Okay.
So he drains everything out. I think the bill was $125, $150, I don't know. And that's about an hour's worth of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that customer saved a lot of money.
That was it. That was the fix.
Yeah, getting a second opinion. That's kind of the important stuff. But you can't just call around on the phone and say, how much is a new evaporator? Because you're wasting everybody's time. There isn't anybody, dealers, independents, chains. We don't work off someone else's estimate. We don't work off on somebody else's diagnosis. We want to see it ourselves. Mm-hmm. We want to drive it ourselves. I'm talking for everybody.
Sure.
So if you're told something and you start bidding it, most of us aren't going to bid it. We need the car in front of us, and we need to see the symptoms, because the repair, as you well know, is symptoms, estimate, repair, then verification of that you fix the car. And that's kind of how it works. I'll tell you the number one thing we see is lower control arm bushings. I'll bet you there's 10 people out there right now that have just recently been told that their lower control arm bushings are bad. So let's talk about the adjectives on lower control arm bushings. The adjectives could be it's worn, it's cracked, it's I can see cracks versus, oh, it's cracked. And then the last one is it's bad. Now, here's the deal. When the lower control arm bushings are bad, if you take, not, I don't care what car you're driving, if you take off rapidly, there's likely to be a clunk. And when you come to a stop rapidly, it's liable to be a clunk. That means that the lower control arms are moving around in that bushing. Clunk, 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 clunk. Mm-hmm. It won't be two clunks. It'll just be one. Clunk, and then clunk. That's a symptom. I am in the majority that says cracking is just not a word we're going to use. It's either good or it's bad. That's all. Now, bad. I want to describe a lower control arm bushing to you. I want you to take a pipe about the size of a silver dollar. I want you to put a bolt through the middle of it that's the size of a Crayola. And then I want you to wrap rubber around that. Okay? So the Crayola that mm-hmm. sits inside this donut cannot touch any metal because there's rubber there. So if you have no rubber, it's pretty doggone obvious when you drive the car. But they're all cracked, and they're all, oh, we see cracked.
A little bit, yeah.
I had a caller the other day, a shop called me, and he says, I got to tell you about lower control arm bushings because that's a really big deal, and it's very highly profitable. You put the lower control arm bushings, you get to line the car, ding, bingo, dangle, and you're making money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and it's no risk money. But the other day, he got a car in, and the customer said, I've been told I need lower control arm bushings. This is what he said to me. We had to use a flashlight and a mirror to see one crack. And the crack was so small, it didn't even look like any wrinkles in my face.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was just, how did they see the crack with a flat, unless he's a flat? And that's just not, it, that's not fair.
Right.
That's just not right. So it's, and I'll tell you something else, oil leaks. Nothing winds up my underwear tighter than oil leaks. Okay, so here's the deal. Weeping. These are the words, adjectives they use. I just wrote these down. Weeping, seeping, and wet and dripping.
Okay,
that's kind of the way it is. Weeping.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a rubber seal on a car that doesn't have some weeping, which is just an oily exterior around
residue around it or something.
Thank you for that. So if it's weeping, and is different than seeping.
Right.
Okay. Weeping is we're wet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use the word wet. That's kind of the first one. So wet and weeping are kind of the same. Then we got seeping. That's different. Then we got just dripping. And we got wet all over the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the customer has one question. That's it. Just one question. What color is it? And will I see it on the ground in my garage?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, it's green, or it's red, or it's brown, or whatever. It can be clear fluid. And they go this, and say, well, you know what? Why don't you write me up an estimate, attach your business card to it, staple it onto the estimate, and what I like to do is go home and look at my garage.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nothing on the ground, then somebody's on their white horse with twin six-shooters with a mask over their face trying to take advantage of you. So the weeping and seeping and leaking and all that kind of stuff just goes, it's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening a lot.
Yeah, we see a lot. And I bet you, would you say 7 out of 10 people don't need what somebody has told them they need, a big repair bill?
I would say 7 to 8.
Okay.
7 to 8 out of 10.
I would too.
And we're being generous as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We're not beating anybody up. We're not saying your shop is a bad shop or anything like that. It's just you're going to ask the questions, and we have to put the question in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Are my lower control arms bushings bad enough to necessitate installation of new bushings?
Right.
Well, your car has 40,000 miles on it. I did see one crack. If this was, and this is what I always say, and everybody mm-hmm. laughs, you can take my grandkids to Disneyland and back, and I'm quite sure you're all going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
No, if this was my car, now the customers say, do you love your wife? Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Or no, I hate her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, well, would you replace these on your wife's car? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. What, does your wife drive to Flagstaff and back? Yeah, once in a while. No, still no. So here's what you look for. A clunk on hard acceleration, a clunk on braking. That's what you look for.
Mm-hmm.
If you have those kinds of symptoms, then most likely you've got some upper or lower control arm bushings that are bad. Now, do you replace both sides?
I don't know that.
Well, it just depends. It depends on the mileage more than anything else. Mm-hmm. If a car's got 80 to 100, I think you do both sides.
Sure.
If the car's got 40 and you're going to do one, and you don't want to do one because they're in pairs, so you do the two, you do two of them, and that just makes it better for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So weeping, seeping, and all that kind of stuff has a lot to do with your car. But you just need to ask the right question. When they're talking about weeping and seeping and leaking, mm-hmm. you need to say, what color is it? And show me underneath the car where it's at. Oh, it's right in front of you. Okay, how far behind the headlights? Mm-hmm. Oh, about 18 inches. Good, I'll look.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say, write it down and give me an estimate and attach your business card to it, if they're pulling on your leg, they probably won't do that.
Yeah.
They'll pull out a napkin from McDonald's and write it on there, but they're not going to tell you who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, I've got a 14 Mustang GT, and I dropped the tranny pan and captured every bit of fluid that came out, and 8 quarts came out. Now, normally... But I had the front of the car elevated on jack stands. Now, normally, only about 5.5 quarts come out. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think you're judging your 64 Mustang with your 14
Mustang. No, it's the same Mustang. Same Mustang that I had changed it, you know, about 20,000 miles ago.
No, you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm saying your old car did hold 5 quarts, but the new cars hold a lot more. And so what you really need to do is get on the internet and look for the transmission fluid specifications. And basically the pan's going to have about half of what you total. So if you take 8, it'll probably have 4. And we're going to keep some in the converter. Now, how deep is the pan? How deep is the pan?
Oh,
is
it's probably
2 inches?
About 3 inches. About 3 inches deep.
And you think you got 7 quarts out of it? 8 quarts out of it?
Well... Maybe I didn't state this right. The last time I did it, about 20,000 miles ago, the car was level on the jack stands.
Okay.
This time when I drained it, the front end was elevated on the jack stands about 3 inches higher than the back. And I got, what I'm saying is I got 3 more quarts of tranny fluid out.
Okay.
Just by dropping the pan.
I would have guessed
three
and bet that you wouldn't get it. Because the torque converter is that big round tub in the front, and it doesn't drain. If you stand the car in the rear bumper, it ain't going to drain. So I don't understand what you're telling me. I can tell you the oil pan on your Mustang doesn't hold 7 quarts or 6 quarts. You would have had oil that's...
This is the tranny pan I'm talking about.
I've been talking about tranny pans.
Oh, yeah. Well, you said oil. So you
oil pan on the tranny.
Tranny. Okay, yeah, well, probably confused.
We've been talking about transmissions this whole time.
Okay.
So, we can argue all you want, but you're wrong. The oil pan doesn't hold anywhere near 7 quarts. If you would have undone that oil pan, you'd have had oil running to the neighbor's house. There's no way you can drop the pan, and if it has 7 quarts in it, and not have oil everywhere. There's no way the pan holds more than 2 quarts, 2.5. Maybe 3. So I can't help you, but I would look at the owner's manual, or I would get a technical manual and look and see how many quarts it has on a service and on a flush. Those are the two issues. A service, drop the pan, replace the filter, put the pan back up, bring it back to full. A flush, we're getting all of it. And we're going to shove in 14 quarts and shove out 14 quarts, or shove in 10 or shove in out. You know who's going to call me? Alger's going to call me.
I'm sure he is.
Alger's
going to
call me on my cell phone and chew my butt.
Right.
But you know what? If I'm wrong, I'll admit it.
Right.
He's
just saying there's a huge difference in what he got out before and what he got out this time because the car was in a different position. So.
Okay, but I explained that the torque converter, if you stand it on the rear bumper, it ain't going to leak anymore.
So that's the only place extra oil would come from.
That's all. Okay. That's all it comes. It comes from the torque converter. The torque converter converts engine power to... transmission and sends it to the back end of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big tub. The tub is bigger than the biggest softball, okay? And it's totally round.
All right.
Okay? And it's, if you took the, big softball. Mm-hmm. Not a little one, but a big one.
I didn't know there was different sizes.
I didn't either.
There's a baseball and a softball.
No.
Okay.
This is a softball, and it goes all in a circle.
Okay.
And what it does is the motor is connected to the torque converter, and inside the torque converter is fluid. Mm-hmm. So as we spin it, we create pressure, and then all of a sudden we're motoring down the road.
Okay.
So. Don't try to correct me.
Okay, Bob, sorry. Okay. He couldn't answer your question. We'll see if we can get an expert on the tranny pants.
No, the fact that I answered the question. The question is he's just wrong. Unfortunately, he's wrong. He wants me to believe that he's going to lift up the front of the car and all of a sudden it's going to dump out 7 quarts. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
So, okay. And I said twice, if you stand the car up on its rear bumper,
I know.
You're not going to have any.
We heard you. Settle down.
The only thing missing on that was YouTube, you know?
Yeah, thank goodness.
Oh, man. The other day, a guy called me in YouTube, and I said, you know, I see where we're at. Stop pointing at the clock. He started off with YouTube, and I just bit my tongue until it was bloody. And folks, this is the reason why. You're talking to somebody on the internet, and he's made a video. And he's telling you how to fix your car over the internet. I can't even do that. I'm shooting about 20% of the time. I'm right. If they give me good symptoms, I'm right. But if I say does it wobble at the seat or does it wobble on the steering wheel, and they give me the wrong answer, I'm going to give them the wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
But YouTube is good entertainment. But if those guys were that good in making videos and diagnosing your car, then they'd be working at a garage that makes $50,000 to $100,000 a year, and that's a whole lot better than holding your phone out and doing a YouTube.
I don't know. I've heard lots of people make lots of money on YouTube. But
it might be porn, and I'm not doing porn.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Okay, 21 we'll minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. You have no idea what goes on behind the scenes and how I have to calm my wife down.
Take the abuse. Raymond, I'm surprised you even called after that first call, and I figured nobody else would call because they didn't want to get their butt chewed.
we do the show behind the show.
Right.
And a transmission oil pan is probably 12 by 12, and it's probably 2 to 3 inches tall.
Okay.
Look at the oil pan. You've seen an oil pan 100 times in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That thing holds 5 quarts.
Okay.
Okay. We're talking about a big difference here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to be nice. Raymond, how are you, buddy? What can I do for you?
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
You know, I'm doing better than I was 15 minutes ago.
Well, I got a situation with my truck that I got to ask a question on. But more importantly, I got a situation that you might be interested in.
Okay.
And it deals with the industry.
Okay.
On YouTube, I mean, not YouTube, but on 60 Minutes within the last 2 months, there's a guy who deemed himself the savior of the world.
Uh-huh.
And one thing he created from vegetables, all three items are from vegetables, is he created a sugar that would not decay teeth or cause diabetes. The other thing is he created a plastic that would actually dissolve after a couple hours, a couple days, a couple months, a couple years, whatever you set it for.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But the thing that you might be interested in is he created a gasoline that is 100% that I do believe, I didn't see all the article, but I do believe it was supposed to be 100% pollution-free.
Okay. Well, in order to get pollution-free fuel, let's just talk about fuel, we have to burn every molecule, every single molecule.
Mm-hmm.
So if you send 1 million molecules into the engine, into the combustion chamber to have the spark plug fire, then you have to kill all of them with flame. So you have to burn them all up. Now, today, compared to yesterday, compared to the 70s, in the 60s and 70s, if you locked yourself in the garage with your car, you'd be dead in 20 minutes. Okay? That's how dirty the tailpipe is. The mm-hmm. newer model cars today, the 18s and 19s, you're going to be in the garage for a couple of days, and you're going to have to order meals from the Pizza Hut because you're not going to. But I understand what you're saying, and we've seen this before. But the question is how is he making the engine more efficient to burn the fuel completely.
Well, now, I don't know, but he, I didn't see all the aspect of the article, okay? But take a look at it and see what's going on, because he's got three senators backing him.
Okay.
And he has a corporation trying to help him out.
Okay.
So take a look at the article.
All right, send me the link on the article, mark@marksalem.com, and let me tell you about three senators, okay? If we got three senators backing it, you've lost my attention already because it's self-serving. But I will. I promise I'll do it. I promise I'll look at it. But anyway.
I'll look up the – I'll see if I can't find the article, okay. And I'll send it to you.
Okay. All right.
Because if it's true, because he – anyway.
Okay.
The other thing is I kind of deal with the oil. My question for my truck is I kind of deal with – I got to – an 11.
You need to hurry up.
Silverado.
We're up against a break. Okay.
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 I got an 11 Silverado, and I've been going down to Gateway Chevrolet to get my oil changed and everything else. Well, I noticed a little bit of oil underneath my truck the other day, so I went out this morning and checked the oil on the dipstick to make sure I had oil enough to drive it, and the oil was cold, was about a quart above the full line.
Okay.
I took it down to Chevrolet and I showed him and whatnot, and he said, oh, well, there's a vent system in the engine that keeps the seals, because back in the day.
Okay, we're done. We're done. He's wrong. There is no vent system. If you found it a half a quart over the full mark, then they messed up. That's all there is to it. You're not supposed to do that. And what happens is your truck will take 4.5 quarts of oil and they'll put 5 in it. Or your Honda takes 4.5 quarts of oil and they'll put 5 in it. So they don't know what to do the extra other half a quart in the bottle. So what he said to you is not true. Your Silverado is airtight and we have a PCV valve and it sucks the internal pressure out and it burns it and sends it out the tailpipe. The fact of them, I don't know where the oil leak came from, but I'm telling you the explanation is pure bovine excrement. How did you like that?
Lovely.
Ah, so anyway, it's just not true. And so now it does happen to us every once in a while. We do an oil change, and we may not get all the oil off the cross member because the drain is right above the cross member. And they'll come back in and they'll say, "Yeah, I've got a leak I didn't have before. You gave me a leak. Put it up on the rack. Yep, we messed up." So then we run it to the car wash next door, hose off that the cross member from behind and in front and from the left and the right, apologize profusely, and sometimes, depending on their attitude, we'll give them a free oil change the next time. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes when you take the filter off, you do the same thing. You drip oil all over the undercarriage, and then the customer sees it there. But this vent hypothesis is not something I'm buying. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
All about
34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, my cohort in car repair for 39 years or something like that.
Yes,
you did. Started when you were 5?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. It's a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop, and they have some of the best diesel technicians in the business. They're dedicated for the best service. They get the job right done right the first time, and they're estimate is exactly what they told you, or a little bit less. And that's why the customers should ask for out-the-door pricing. Because by the time we add 10% sales tax and 10% shop supplies and environmental charges, you can understand we're going to be over a bit. So out-the-door pricing is what you should look for, and they do that a lot. They work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're located just south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is the owner, and he's the one you're likely to meet and deal with, and he's a really, really good guy. So
Raymond
called back, and he said he was sorry for getting me all upset, and I thank you for your apology, and I likewise should like to apologize for you because I should have answered the portion of the question because my wife reminded me that the half a quart just should come out. But one of the things in my defense is a half a quart, I'm not quite sure that's going to cause a leak. That's why I followed up with the oil on the cross member.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I followed. Now, if it had been 2 or 3 quarts, then yeah. What happens is the oil is below the spinning crankshaft. Okay? When we overfill it, the crankshaft will start beating on the oil, and it'll foam the oil, and it'll throw oil all over the inside of the engine. And a lot of times that will create. But engines are still sealed, and so it's not likely. But it could come out the front seal or the rear seal, oil seal. But it's just not likely. It's more likely that they made a mess when they did the oil change. And
okay,
it's unfortunate.
And he was saying, would it damage the engine? It shouldn't damage the engine,
no.
But it shouldn't be in there.
No. That's easy. Put it up on the rack and figure out, did your technician do something wrong?
Mm-hmm.
But now, if the oil's coming from up high and he never had an oil leak and you can tell there's never been an oil leak, then you overfill the heck out of it.
Right.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
The ad mark. How far is it from the full mark?
1 quart, I assume.
No, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So a half a quart over the full mark is half the distance between the full and the at. Yes?
Okay.
Okay. It's hard. I know that they're trying to draw a picture, but it's going to be, I mean, the ad mark might be a half an inch, so the half a quart over might be a quarter of an inch over.
Mm-hmm.
Most people wouldn't even notice that. So every once in a while I hear this complaint, but my answer is they probably put 5 quarts in a system, or 6 quarts that held a 5.5.
Yeah.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Do you have anything else that you want to talk to me about and beat me up about?
Yeah, just be nice.
Okay, I'll do my best to be nice. It's in our industry, things are going to slow down. First of all, we have year-round school. So mm-hmm. before, we used to get really busy in May because everybody was getting ready to go on a vacation. So April and May were really, really busy. June, July was overheats, air conditioning not working, I want to take a vacation, my car's not ready for it. August, everybody's coming back, and it's a little humid. We're still dealing with air conditioning issues, but September, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd have a slow September, October, and then November with Thanksgiving, and then December with Christmas. So there was, 9 months of the year we were running and gunning, and 3 months a year you sat around and played poker and, with the guys in the shop. Well, it's not that anymore in the sense that it's year-round school. So those vacations move all the way around. So we're kind of busy. But we're also slow because the new cars have huge mileage stops.
Mm-hmm.
So where it used to be 30,000, it's now 90,000. Where it used to be 50,000, it's now 100,000. So when it used to be 3,000, it's now 10,000. So we have all this movement with respect to the maintenance stops when you have to have this done at this particular miles. We're using synthetic fluids, and they last as long as we're talking about. We're using synthetic engine oils. It lasts as long as we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If people drive 18,000 miles a year, they can do 2 oil changes because 9 is on the first and 9 is on the second as long as they use synthetic oil.
Right.
Transmission fluid has become synthetic in a big way.
Yeah.
It's the same way. The temperature that it turns ugly in is much higher.
Mm-hmm.
And the transmission's fluid is running a little hotter than before. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question this, Mrs. Car Repair.
Okay.
All right. The oil
1 minute
in the engine usually runs about 220 degrees. What's the oil in the transmission run?
No idea. 260.
Okay. It's about the same as engine oil.
Oh, is it?
One way or the other. Now, if you're hauling your boat and you're climbing Rye Hill going into Payson,
mm-hmm.
The transmission fluid's going to get a little warmer because the transmission's working a little hotter.
Right.
And the reason I know that is I have been monitoring my transmission and my oil as I go up and down the mountain.
Yeah.
And at the most, they might be 15 degrees difference. But that's when you're driving and you're trying to race the guy next to you.
I was just going to say that. You mean that's when you're going 100 miles an hour?
No,
yes.
That's not true. That's
yes.
not true.
Well, that was one thing. When Bob called, he said that he was doing his transmission service again after 20,000 miles, and I thought that was kind of short time frame, too. So.
And I hope he isn't using a conventional fluid, a Dextron, a conventional uh-huh. Dextron, if the car calls for a synthetic. But it's an 11, so it's 8 years old, so I was going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
But you're right. But there's a comfort zone in the old guys and the young guys in doing something extra early. And you know why, though, don't you?
No.
Because if we do the oil change at 3,000 miles...
Your car's going to love you more.
You've heard me say that before.
About a million times.
Don't finish my sentence. It's dramatic. I have to finish my sentence. And I tell people, your car's not going to love you anymore if you were to change the oil every 1,000 miles. Mm-hmm. It's not going to love you anymore. If it fails and it's going to die at 67,000 miles, you can change the oil every day and that motor's going to die at 67,000 miles. So it doesn't do any good to have your car love you.
Okay.
And besides, none of the vehicles that I've ever owned loved me.
No, they don't, because you ride them hard.
I do, but I pull big tractors and I pull big trailers and stuff like that. But, yeah, I'm riding them kind of hard. Mm-hmm. Anyway, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. We're going to do this. We're going to talk about year, make, and model. We're going to talk about symptoms or question. And so a lot of times when I'm talking to people about their car stuff, I say to them, here's the question. Mm-hmm. Okay? So here's the question to him. Are you sure it was 7 quarts? How did you find it was 7 quarts? Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of frame the question. I'm not expecting customers to properly frame the question, but sometimes I'll regurgitate them back to them and say, okay, here's the real question. Here's the second question. Do you know what it is?
No.
What do you do, Mark? What do you do? What is you, what do you do for
you
your wife?
Do?
That's
okay.
Right. That's right. That's the second question. That's easy for me to answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever do nothing to your car.
That's right. I get the guys at the shop to do
yeah,
it for me.
Yeah. You run around on bald tires where they can see the air inside.
Not.
All right. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Forty-five minutes after the hour, Mark Salem and my wife Renee sitting here to help you. And listen. We thought of something during the break. If you and your wife or you and your husband have an argument, give us a call, 602-508-0960. If one of you can give your argument and hand the phone to the other or whatever, but we'll chime in. So we'll vote on what we think is right. But the question of who drives better, men or women, that's not what we're dealing with for obvious reasons, because that's going to be some self-serving answer. Nevertheless, Kurtz Automotive is up on I-17 in Bell. I've known Kurtz for a very, very long time. He opened his doors in 1987. He has Jeff and Eric working with him. They're both relatives of his. And I want to tell you, between the three of them, who are all ASE Master Certified Technicians, you can't really draw to a better group than a bunch of Master Techs that are working on your car, especially if more than one of them has gray hair and been around the block a few times. So they're at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive. He's a good guy, I promise you. Let's go to Irene first. Good morning, Irene. How are you?
Hi, Mark. How are you? First-time caller.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You can go ahead.
Oh, so my question is, I have a 2004 Toyota Highlander,
okay.
And I've been diligent about maintenance. And the last couple of months, every time I turn the car on, there's a really loud screech. So my Google research said it could be a belt, but then process of elimination, it only happens if the air conditioning is on. So then I Googled that, and I think it may be the condenser. So my question is, I've always taken the car to the dealership for maintenance, and I would like to find a second opinion, and I just feel like there's no honest repair shop.
And it's okay for you to
so
feel that.
So that's why I call you.
Yeah, it's okay you feel that way. Well, let's talk about it's the compressor. Not the condenser,
the
but
compressor.
The compressor.
Okay.
That's okay. That's okay. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to open up the hood when you know it's going to squeal, probably first thing in the morning, okay? But
correct.
I want you to keep the air off. So start it up, rev it a couple times. Then the next morning, mm-hmm. I want you to turn the air on before you start the car and see what happens. Now, if I were looking at your car, what I'd have is a spray bottle with water in it. I'd get the squeal to happen, and then I'd start spraying one belt at a time. And as soon as I hit the belt with water that's squealing, I know that's it. But the squealing tells you one of two things. The belt needs to be tensioned. We need to tighten up the belt. Or it needs to be replaced. How many miles are on your Highlander?
178.
Have you done belts ever before?
I don't. Believe so.
Okay.
Not if the dealership didn't tell me I needed it.
Okay, I'd change them all because my personal comfort zone is 8 years and 80,000 miles for belts and hoses. So I would, you know, you can do the hoses next summer, at the beginning of the summer, but as far as your belts are concerned, and you did a good job in describing it, but I think the only thing left out is for sure is every time I start it and the air's off, it doesn't do it. Every time I start it and the air's on, it does it. Bingo, bingo, bingo. You've saved yourself $50 in diagnostic time.
Now,
what part of town do you live in?
I live in Scottsdale up by the air park.
Okay, Blackwell is at 40th Street and Greenway. Okay.
Blackwell?
Yep. Okay. He's not going to take advantage of you. He's not going to sell you something you don't need. He's a good guy. He's a friend of mine. As a matter of fact, him and his wife and Renee and I spent last weekend together. And so I know him. I've known him for 25 years. And the other day he called me. I'm talking to my wife now. He called me with the customer in the office.
Yeah, I remember that.
And my first thing out of my mouth when my buddies call me is, if there's anybody listening to me, you need to tell me because I'm kind of ornery at times and my mouth isn't that clean sometimes.
You don't have a filter.
Yeah. So anyway, he's laughing his tail end off because the customers are there and I go, they're there, aren't they? He goes, yeah, you sent them to me. And I said, great. I said, I only want to hear if he fixed it. That's all I want to hear.
Yeah.
And they said he did. So I would go to Blackwell at 40th and Greenway, tell him what you told me. Maybe you can duplicate the problem. But I think if you say no air conditioning start, squeal's not there, yes air conditioning. Now, there is a 1 in 6, 7, or 8 chance that the compressor is causing the problem. But us old gray-haired guys are just going to grab a hold of the belt. And we'll know if it's the belt or not. So it could be a compressor. But if it's a compressor, I'd wait till it went bad if I were you. You could get another year or two out of that thing. So and when it goes bad, it's going to really get bad. And then you'll know it's time.
But it's not going to cause any more damage either to
the
vehicle.
No, the compressor's bad already.
Yeah.
Okay. And it won't just like get worse and worse and worse.
It might, but you're going to know that. Okay. And then two, there is a if the compressor locks up, then it'll throw that belt off. It'll burn that belt off. And sometimes that belt causes the other belts to come off. Mm-hmm. Not always, but sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is probably a 2 or a 3. Don't let it get past a 6, okay?
Okay. Can I just say, too, I always wanted to tell you this, that I think I remember you from Channel 3 years ago, and when I accidentally came across you on the radio, I was like, oh, my gosh. So I started listening. And I'm not even into cars, and I think this show is so helpful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And you're right. Channel 3 was where I started, and I had a segment once a week, was it?
Yep.
Once a week, a three or three-and-a-half-minute segment. Yep. We had fun on the segment. Dan Davis and what was the girl's name?
Tara Hitchcock.
Tara Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jody Applegate.
Jody Applegate. Yeah. Now, I want to tell you something real quick, Irene. I remember one morning when I showed up, and everybody was huddled around in the control room, and they have 20 TVs, okay? And they have from all over the United States, and it's just really quiet. And I'm sitting there looking at the TV, and then I know now it was the Oklahoma bombing. And we were just spellbound with 20 televisions showing different versions of this. And then Margaret Beardsley, she turned to me. She was the director, and this lady was tough, but she was always nice to me. She turned to me, and she says, we won't be doing your spot. And I said, okay. And I understand. But let me tell you something else. Fast forward however many years. I walk in, and the control room is the same, and I get this feeling of, wow. And I look up, and 9/11 had just started.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember that day.
And he turned around. I don't know who turned around to me and said, you won't be doing your segment. Now, both times I hung around in that room for the next 2 hours watching the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, both times those things happened, God forbid if they happen again, I happened to be having a segment. And then they'd say, well, we're not going to do your segment. And I said, I'm thinking in the big world of importance. My segment isn't that important. But thank you for saying that, Irene. Thank you very much. Gene, you're up next. How can I help you, Gene?
I have got a 2011 Toyota Tundra, 108,000 miles on it. It has run just like a tank. I mean, I take good care of it, change the oil regularly, rotate the tires. And the last time I rotated the tires, the front right tire a noise started. I thought maybe the guy forgot to tighten the lug nuts. It was that pronounced, and I'm just one of these anal guys hate rattles.
Yeah.
And so I pulled over to the side of the road. Thought, man, the tire's going to fall off. Wasn't the tire. And there has been a persistent rattle in the right front quadrant. I cannot figure it out now. My mechanic told me a while back that my struts were starting to leak, so I went and bought new struts, changed the strut, actually did it myself, had the front end alignment. That didn't do it. So there's still a rattle in there, and I had them when they did the alignment, checked the ball joints,
okay.
All that.
Okay, you still got the rattle. So nothing else matters. You still got the rattle. So unless you transferred a bad upper mount to those struts, then that could be it. But this isn't that hard. You just have to know what you're doing. So if I took it out for a drive, you'd be sitting next to me, but I'd be driving. And I'd make gentle right turns and left turns, and then I'd make bigger, faster right turns and left turns, and then I'd make really big, fast turns and light turn. Then I'd drive the car at 10 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, and I would want to know if the cadence of this noise moves with speed. And if the cadence at 10 miles an hour and 100 miles an hour sounds like somebody typing on a typewriter real fast, then bingo, I got it. So I know that it's
now,
something.
Now, what it is if you go over a bump. If you go over a bump, it sounds like somebody left a screwdriver between the wheel well and something. It's rattling back and forth.
Okay.
It doesn't happen when you're just driving straight down the road. Doesn't matter if you're turning or left. It doesn't do it when that. You go over a little bump, you hear a rattle on the passenger right
okay.
Before.
I'm not going to be able to diagnose this over the phone. I'm giving you examples of what needs to happen. Have you ridden in the passenger side of that vehicle in a while?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Yes or no is fine. The reason I ask you this is because oftentimes we'll take two technicians, one will drive and one will sit in the passenger seat, and they'll get it to happen, then they switch places. The question is which side is it really on? I know you said it's on the right front, and I know you said you knew how to change struts, but I got to tell you something. I've been in a car, and I've picked the wrong side more than once. So and then we have something if really sophisticated if you want, and we'll put transmitters all over the front of the car, and one guy will sit in the passenger seat with a set of headphones on it, and he'll know the transmitter 1, 2, 3, or 4. He'll know where they're at and where's the noise is at. But, I mean, I can't fix your noise over the phone, but I'm quite sure that if we had a fresh pair of eyes that were seasoned, that they would have a much better chance. But there's parts of the strut that you replaced. You should have replaced, and if you didn't replace them and the noise started after that or, you know, sometime after that, then obviously there may be a problem. But changing the struts for a noise isn't sound like a good idea to me because I know the struts were expensive. So it's unfortunate that somebody – here's a good example of somebody guessing, costing him a lot of money, and missing it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So there is two mounts up on the top of the struts, and if those are like big pancake mounts. And if those mounts are bad, then you'll have the same noise when you're done. And they don't come with the strut, so mm-hmm. You have to buy those separately. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We don't have a caller right now, but when we come back for the next hour, if you'd like to join us, we have five lines, 602-508-0960. Gil will be answering the phone, and he'll put you in line, and then he'll say in my ear, Betty's on the phone, or mm-hmm. Jody's on the phone, Joan's on the phone. Action Auto Repair is a really good shop at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Tom has been a friend of mine since early 80s, and probably most specifically, and we talked about this so many times, about 1983. He really is a good guy. He's a world-class fisherman, but he's a really great guy. He knows cars very well. His technicians know car very well. And he's one of those guys that is pretty demanding with respect to his technicians. Not to a point of being ugly and having technicians work for him a week and take off. But they all understand that Tom has a line in the sand. And actually most of us do. And as you can imagine, I do. So, and if we're seasoned, then we know BS from the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem is created, is if one of the technicians tells Tom that A and A plus A equals M, and Tom knows that that's not the case, but he doesn't have those problems. This is Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Action Auto. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in an hour, in 10 minutes or 15 minutes, with another hour of frivolity.
Actually, it's probably about 6 minutes.
6 minutes? Okay, we'll be back then.
Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, or if you want us to settle an argument between the husband and the wife, or the husband and the son, or the wife and the neighbor, whatever, we can chime in on that. We can chime in on Auto Dynamics up in Sun City. It's probably one of the shops. Well, it is the only shop that I recommend in Sun City. It's a family-owned place, and Chuck and I have been friends since 1968. Mm-hmm. And his son, Derek, now runs it. And he's a good guy. And he's been trained well. He's gathered the best part of his father and left the other parts to the side, just very much like our kids have done.
Exactly.
Anyway, so family owned and operated since 1982. They're really good at what they do. And Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay, folks, here's a story. Mm-hmm. We're up here at our horse property in the mountains, and the dogs are going crazy, and we have the door shut to the radio studio, but we can hear them barking, and we're hoping you can't get them barking. So Renee gets up. Now, first of all, the dog, one of the dogs is Jet, and she only speaks German. That's all she speaks. So Renee goes outside, and on our back fence, there's a couple of full-sized elk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a baby that's crawled through the fence onto our property.
Right.
So at this point, go.
I had to try to go out and wrestle that little baby. Well, I was going to go out and try to help it through the fence, back through the fence, because I didn't see the baby at first. The mom was kind of crying, and then I heard some little, you know, elk
squeaking.
Over here crying, squeaking. So I walked up to it kind of quietly, not real close, and it started running along the fence, and I'm thinking, well, we had put in some mesh fence because we didn't want the elk to get in there. They were kind of chewing on the trees. Yeah. And so luckily it was scared enough of me to climb through the fence right before it got to that mesh fence. So,
which gave it right through the fence.
Right.
Now, folks, the mom and moms were on the other side of the fence.
Yes.
Otherwise, that was a stupid thing for you to do.
I know.
Okay, but they were on the other side of the fence, and they can't jump our fence. Now, I'm going to tell you another story. I want you to picture a square box, folks, a square box. Okay? Our house is in the middle of the square box. One morning, we're having coffee, and I say to you, there's a bunch of elk in the backyard. And we look outside. How many were there?
I don't know, 12 or 14 at least.
A lot.
Yeah.
So, now keep in mind, we're in our jammies, okay? Mm-hmm. We're in our jammies. So we have to herd the elk back through the gate I left open the night before. So Renee's out there in her jammies, and so am I. So Renee's going to push him along the fence, just walk behind him, mm-hmm. and push him to the corner. Then she's going to curve around and get behind him. Meanwhile, I'm off the fence a little bit, keeping them from turning back on us. So we don't want them to make a U-turn. We want to go into the fence and then turn left and move on down. So between the two of us, we get them into what we call the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big wide area that's got fence on three sides and a gate.
Mm-hmm.
So we get them into the hallway. We shoo them through the gate. And I remember there was someone who said, I saw you guys out the other morning.
No, but just about that time, the workers show up to do, they were doing something here at the house, and so.
And you were in your jammies.
Yeah.
And you had your slippers on.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so this is something. In June, if you're going to come up to the North Country, June, we see elk babies born the day, first day of June, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And throughout June, we have babies. They're born about the size of a dog. A large dog, a German Shepherd.
Yeah, long-legged dog.
And they sit out in the meadow, and all you can see is their ears. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the mothers that have just been babies because they got a little blood in that area. But we can have what? How many mothers and how many babies have we had? Because you're going to say I'm a liar no matter what I pick.
Well, it used to be, you know, 80 or something like that. But now it's, I don't know, the herd's kind of dwindled a little bit.
So and 30 moms, 30 babies on the top end.
Yeah.
Now, the bulls are out mm-hmm. and they're fighting and clattering and bellering and all that kind of stuff. Because in September, is romance time. Mm-hmm. So in September, from 1st to, like, they know the calendar from the 1st to the end of September, the boys are dating the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, folks, you're not going to believe this, but we'd like to sleep with our windows open in September because it's a beautiful time. But we can't sleep with our windows open because there's so much going on in the pasture next to us, and there's so much noise and amorization.
Oh,
and
settle down.
I'm just trying to draw a picture.
I know.
Okay, they're having sex out there, okay? And they're making a heck of a lot of noise. And we have to roll up our windows. We have to close our windows in September. So anyway, we have a radio studio up here at the horse property of the ranch, and that's where we're in the room. But our dogs started barking, so Renee got up to shoo them outside of the studio, and that's where she found the elk.
Yeah.
And you have your thongs on. I
have my thongs on. Yep.
So you're out there wrestling the baby with your
right.
thongs on.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, we got a caller, Gil. Who might that be?
That would be Alex.
Alex, good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, so I just have a question. I have, I'm trying to change my battery in a 2016 Chevy Malibu.
Okay.
And so what's going on is when I sit in the car, all the dash lights turn on and everything. It's one of those proximity keys where you hold down the brake and then press the button. And when I try to crank the engine, it's not cranking, but all the electrical stuff is working perfectly fine. But when I try to crank the engine, it's just making a slow clicking noise,
Okay.
And I thought it was a battery, but I tried to jump start the battery, and it's still doing the same thing.
Okay. Let's talk about that. And thank you for giving me all that information. In order to crank over the car, we have to have between 9.5 and 10.5 volts. Okay. All the lights don't need that much. The starter is going to draw 200 amps through the battery, and all your lights on your dashboard, all your headlights are going to draw 10 to 20. So there's a difference between 10 and 20 and 200. So the click, click, click is a low voltage problem. So that means that we're down below 9, and we don't have enough power to engage the solenoid and then crank the starter. The clicking is a real key here. Now, here's my question. Does it ever act right?
Like when I try to crank the engine?
You walk out there, you hit the key, boom, starts right up. Does it ever do that?
Well, this is actually a friend's car. It's not my car.
Okay. All right, so you don't know the answer to that. Okay.
No, usually it just starts up. This is just a recent thing. It just happened all of a sudden. I do know that.
Okay. Well, the question really is the starter overamped? Is it dragging? And if it's hot, it'll drag more than when it's cold. So the reason is, the answer to my question would be, oh, yeah, intermittently it starts just fine. Or, no, if I hit the key, it rattles and rattles, and then sooner or later I'll hit the key, and it'll go, rrr, 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 and it starts right up. There's a big difference there. So, and a good shop can test your battery. So can the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, but he wouldn't know a clue he wouldn't know a battery if it jumped up and bit him. The idea is you have to know what the numbers are. We have equipment that will tell us about the CCA of your battery. So if it's a 500 and we tested it, it's 312, we got a problem. In addition to that, if you go to marksalem.com and print FAQ 28 teaches you how to park your car up against something so you can see the headlights. So when it's acting up, you turn the headlights on, and let's pretend they're white and bright. And when you hit the key, the headlights go out completely. But let go of the key and the headlights come on again. That tells us that either the battery's dead or the battery's bad or the starter's bad. But if the starter intermittently works fine, then that leads us to maybe it's the starter. But the testing, how much is an electrical system test?
I want to say it's $40.
I was going to say
$40, $45. Yeah.
Most shops are going to let's open up the, because
yeah.
Here's how I work this. If we're $45, I'm going to quote it $30 to $65.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's $30 to $65 to do alternator, regulator, starter draw, battery condition, all that comes in one test. Unless of course it's intermittent, and if it's intermittent, then it makes it kind of tough. But I'm going to guess battery or starter, but I suggest that you not go by my guess. I suggest you just have somebody test it. Okie doke.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I have another question, if that's okay, which is the same problem. So I actually, in my car, the battery is good, and I wanted to take the battery from my car and put it in this one to test that and see if it was a battery. Is that safe to do?
Yeah, it is safe to do. And here's the deal. If you put that battery in and it starts perfectly, and then maybe you loan her that battery, or her, or the him, your whatever, your mom, dad, your girlfriend, or your wife, whatever, and hopefully you don't have a girlfriend and a wife. So you put it in there, and everything's fine. Then you put the old battery in, and everything's fine. Tell me, what was wrong?
Starter.
Nope. Think about that.
Right?
Uh-uh. No. Think about that. Everything was acting up. You put your battery in, and it's fine. And you put yours back in your car, and you put hers back in, or theirs back in, and everything's fine. What is it? Do you know what it is, Renee?
I would. Yes, I have a good.
Go ahead.
Battery cables.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's absolutely battery cables.
Ah.
Okay, because those are the only thing you messed with.
Yeah.
So is it a side post battery or a top post battery we're talking about?
Top post.
Okay.
And are they both pretty much the same? Don't they have to be like the same type of battery?
It could be a 24, 24F. It could be a lot of different ones. But if they're both about the same size, then that's fine. And if the positive cable needs to be the closest, you can flip the battery 180 degrees to accommodate that. But that might not be a bad – but my FAQ 12 is going to tell them it's a bad battery connection.
12 or 28?
28.
Yeah.
Another thing
I'm kind of confused. I'm kind of confused, too, because when I try to plug in the – I got the positive in there just fine, but when I plug in the negative – I'm trying to plug in the negative battery cable. I have my battery in there right now, and when I try to plug in the negative battery terminal, it's causing a spark. And
is it an arc weld spark, or is it just a small little tick?
It's mainly just a small little tick. I'm just afraid to put it in all the way because I don't know. I'm kind of afraid.
Just touch it and count to 10. It's going to be what we call a keep alive. So we got to keep your clock alive. We got to keep your alarm system alive. We got to keep a lot of things alive. So there's a little bit of a draw on the battery. You probably have the hood open, maybe the lights on. Maybe you have the driver's door open, maybe the lights on. I want to promise you, if you had those battery cables backwards and you hooked one up and then you touched the other one, it would be like an arc welder. It would scare the living hell out of you. And it would melt the lead on the cable or on the battery. So I promise you, if all you got is a little tick, then I'm okay with that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You want to tell any more sex stories from the Elk?
Nope.
Okay.
We got to go.
Well,
take a break.
What else? I'm going to tell one more thing real quick.
Okay.
Now, a while back, we have a dumpster.
Right.
And we found the trash all around the dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a game camera there. Now, if I'm lying, you just raise your hand and say foul.
Okay? I will.
The game camera showed that these crows, these big black crows, would fly into the dumpster because I forgot to shut the lids. They would bring the food out and set it on the ground. Then we had one javelina, one coyote, and seven raccoons that were standing there waiting for the crows to feed them.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yep.
And it was as clear as day on the game camera. And so we learned to keep the dumpster lids quiet or shut.
Me? What's this we stuff? You left the gate open. You left the things open. It sounds like you have a problem remembering things.
That's my job. I admit that.
I know.
When was the last time you emptied the trash out to the dumpster?
Emptied the trash out to the dumpster?
Yeah, took trash out to the dumpster. Other than dog poo-poo. I know you do that. The bottom line.
I do that all the time.
And you left the gate open last night.
You're right, but nobody got out. Nobody escaped.
Oh, so it's okay for me, but it's not okay for you. I fed the horses this morning.
As long as nothing happens.
And the main gate was left open, and the horses were so.
It wasn't open all the way. It was closed.
It was,
they could have just pushed on it and opened it.
And then all hell would have broken loose.
Okay.
And then you'd been out there in your chonies rounding up the horses.
We don't need to discuss it.
I'm just telling you. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. All righty. Good morning, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we have some birthday announcements. Beep, 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 beep. There's a lady named Leanne.
Uh-huh.
It happens to be the mother of my son's wife. Leanne is got, how old is she, 110?
She's no, got, I don't think so.
All right, she's 90.
She's younger than you.
She is? So, Leanne, happy birthday from Mark and Renee.
Mm-hmm.
Leanne lives in Chandler, that area.
Mm-hmm.
She has blonde hair, and she... Right? Am I right so far?
Yes, but what do we need to get into all that?
Because you won't give me your last name.
Oh, stop it. That's right.
Okay.
I'm trying to save her.
All righty. Hopefully she's listening because Alan called us and said you wanted to tell Leanne. So, Leanne, happy birthday. Right?
Yes.
Okay, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And hope you have a good day.
Right, and I'm going to ask Mel to call her and offer her happy birthdays.
Oh, my.
Okay, listen, stop
Alan,
it.
Alan, you should have known this was going to be trouble.
Oh, and I'll tell you something else. My brother, Ralph Salem, it's his birthday today.
That's
He's
right.
our oldest Salem boy,
mm-hmm.
and it's his birthday today. And so if you know him, then please call him and tell him, if I could give you a cell phone, I know they would call and wish my brother happy birthday, but mm-hmm. he'd just kill me
yeah.
if I did that.
Yes.
So anyway, Ralph Salem, it's his birthday today. Let's go to the phones. Bernie, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm still cracking up with the crows feeding their friends.
Yeah.
It's a true story. I am well known for storytelling, but my lie detector sitting next to me. And when she doesn't complain, then I'm telling the story right.
Oh, I know you're right on this. Hey, I got a couple of stories on overfilling the oil.
Okay.
I got a 90 Jeep that I take deer hunting, and I'd get up to Baghdad, and I'd have oil all over the back door, the back window, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while to figure out, but I found out if I ran it a quart low right on the fill line,
uh-huh.
just one quart low, and it wouldn't blow any oil out of the breather.
Okay, now wait a minute. You're running it at the full mark or at the ad mark?
When I ran it at the full mark, I would blow oil.
Okay. All right. Now, the full NAD is one quart. It's pretty universal. It's one quart. So you're saying you dropped it down close to the ad mark, and the oil oil blow by just went away.
Exactly.
Okay.
The thing got like 300,000 miles on it.
Sure, that happens sometimes. And I'll tell you, there's been times we've replaced a dipstick, and I did it wrong. And then we overfilled the car, and it came in with oil all over the back of it and all underneath it, and I put the wrong dipstick in it. I ordered the wrong dipstick. So it does happen, but I don't know what happened to your Jeep, but at least you fixed it, and you're home free.
Yeah, and my wife's Jeep, she's got a 99, and she doesn't like me changing the oil. So when she takes it to the car wash, she'll have them change the oil. Well, she brought it back one day, and the thing was had a spit and a sputter, and I looked in the owner's manual, and it mentioned overfilling the oil. So I popped her hood, pulled the dipstick, and they had that thing about a quart high on the oil.
Okay, and that's a quart high over the full mark, yes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I pulled the drain plug and took a quart out of that thing and got rid of that mess.
Okay, and let me give you one other story real quick. We have guns where we can put like 5 quarts in a car in 11 seconds. There's a Ford mm-hmm. out there that if you pump oil in too fast, it'll fill the valve cover. Then from the valve cover, there's a hose that goes to the air filter, and you saturate the air filter and everything underneath it with brand new mm-hmm. oil because you're zipping the gun. So we now know that because we cleaned up one or two cars. We didn't understand,
mm-hmm.
but of course, nobody's going to squirt 5 quarts in 11 seconds, but it's something that we never figured.
Yeah.
And no one else has really found it, but twice we've had to go in, steam clean the engine, clean everything out, put a new air filter in there, and then bring the... And the oil level's always right. It's just brand oil. But thank you for that, Bernie. Thank you very much. All righty, let's go to Doug. Doug, good morning. What you got on your mind?
Morning, Mark. I have a 2000 Monte Carlo with a 3400 V6. The issue is, a couple weeks ago, I would be going about 20, 30 mile an hour with my foot off the gas. So then I discovered that it's idling about 2,000 RPM.
Okay.
I pull off the road, turn the key off, and restart it, then it would be around 800, like it should be.
Okay.
It's kind of an on again, off again, but the idle keeps on. The issue of going 40 with my foot off the gas still keeps coming back.
Okay. Do you have a check engine light yet?
No check engine light.
Okay. We control a fuel injected oil or a fuel injected engine by adding or subtracting air to the intake to control idle. So, in your particular case, a vacuum leak would cause the idle to surge. It could be in the brake booster, where you apply the brakes and you gave mark, it starts running poorly or it speeds up. Okay, and when I let go of my brake pedal, it goes away. Bingo. You just saved yourself a lot of money. But your 2000 is 20 years old, and I'm betting dollars to donuts it's got a bad idle air control motor. But if you think you're going to change that and set that all back up, you got another thing coming. Oh, you can disconnect the wiring harness, and you can out to unscrew it and screw a new one in there, but it ain't going to work because there is a procedure. The procedure's like this. Wave a dead chicken over your head, honk the horn twice, check the TPS value, check the idle value, and synchronize this to that, and seat the motor, the idle air control motor, then pull the motor back. It's got all of this stuff going on because we have to synchronize the idle air control motor, both open and closed, the TPS, throttle position sensor, and then the idle. So it's going to be a little bit different, but I think that's an easy one to deal with because I'd pull the motor out and look at it, and my seasoned eye, my great eye, my brain, the brain power I have went into, I could look at the carbon on it, and I could also hook up an attachment where I could actually operate it. I know what a good one sounds like and what a bad one sounds like. And
along with a lot of technicians that know what they're talking about.
You're right,
yes.
Gray-haired guys. There's a lot of us that know. So anyway, it could be an EGR valve that sticks open, which gives the engine additional air. However, that might breathe the idle up, but it's going to cause a miss as well. So if you just have an idle up problem, it could be a vacuum leak somewhere, but it's most likely the IAC, idle air control motor. Okay?
Well, what I plan on doing is I live in East Mesa.
Uh-huh.
On Monday, I'm going to call up Thompson's, your shop in Mesa.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to make an appointment to bring it.
But you tell him what you told me. Don't you tell him the guy on the radio diagnosed it as an idle air control motor. Don't tell him that. I like what you said. It goes up and down intermittently, and it doesn't run poorly when it goes up or down. That's perfect. Yeah. That's what they need to hear. Okay, Bernie, thank you very much. Ron, I got to take a break in a minute and a half, so it's not really good to do you justice. So I'm going to take the break because I have to take the break at the exact when I say we'll be back. That's 30 minutes after the hour and 00 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's what radio's all about. This is the only time I am perfect.
Yes, because the rest of the time you don't even pay attention to
time. Wait a minute. See, folks, this is the truth. There are two times in the show that I absolutely have to hit my mark, which is 30 after. That's 30 minutes and no seconds. At the top of the hour, it's 58:50. So I have to hit 58 minutes and 50 seconds exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And unless Renee is yapping her butt off, I can usually do that. However, right now it's 29:20, so I got to kill 40 seconds.
No,
right
you can do your Thompson's.
Oh, you know what? I can do Thompson's. They're in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I put my name next to. They've been around a long time. Brian and Thelma come from gas station vacuums. Backgrounds, Vivian and Thompson. Those names are well known in Mesa. And Brian and his wife Thelma have those two names. So if you're in Mesa, then Thompson's is a great place to go. And by telling Doug to go to he said he's going there, I know he's going to be in good hands. Okay, you ready now? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. See you later. Okay, we have a very big announcement to make, a very, very big announcement. Remember we were talking about Leanne being my son's mother-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I need to add to that because I didn't really do a good job. We just wished her a happy birthday, but here's the more important thing. She's 68 years old. She's single. She has
very
10
pretty.
Kids. She's very pretty, and she has 10 kids, but they're all grown. They're all grown.
10?
So if you want to maybe take Leanne for a Jack in the Box taco or take her for a milkshake at Dairy Queen, mark at marksalem.com, and I'll set you two up together right after we do a criminal history on you.
That's right.
So
we don't want Leanne
60 years
anybody.
Old, kids are grown, very pretty. 10-4?
Yeah.
10-4.
Okay, not
cover.
10 kids.
Ron.
She has two.
Ron, save me on this. What can I do for you, buddy?
I have a Silverado, 2000 Silverado with 180,000 miles on it. The brake pads are still good. Do you suggest I change, have the brake fluid changed?
I would do the brake fluid at the next time you do brakes. It's better to put those together because there's a little bit of duplication. Now, let me ask you a question. Are both pads in the front wearing evenly? So the back one's not accelerated from the front, or the front's not accelerated to the back? Are they both evenly?
You know, all I'm going on is that I don't hear the noise, you know, the little squeaker.
Yeah.
No, I don't hear that. I've never pulled it off or checked it.
Okay. All right. I think you need to do that at your next oil changer stuff, because I want you to know if you've gone 180, I think you hold the record, and I'm north of 60, and I've never seen a car. Now, I'm pretty proud when my truck will do 85, 95, because I'm up and down the mountain a lot. And what have you got on yours?
Well, yeah, I have 87, but we just had that truck in last week, Tom, or a couple weeks ago, yeah, that I think was over 180.
Okay.
Also.
I don't know, but
yeah,
that's a lot of miles.
It is a lot
but
of
I'd
miles.
Be interested, if the inner pad is worn, mm-hmm, excessively, then that means the calipers are hanging up. Then you're going to do both calipers and a brake fluid flush. Bingo, bingo. Those go hand in hand. I'd hate for you to do a brake fluid flush now, then have to do the same thing because you have accelerated wear on the inside pad. Now, if the outside pad is wearing a bunch more than the inside pad, there's two pins that the caliper slides inner and outer on. Those pins are dirty, they're rusty, and the caliper's no longer sliding, which means we need a $30 hardware kit. So when we change the pads, we put new hardware on it. But I don't want to go by just the fact that you don't hear any noise. I really think on your next oil change, you should have them looked at. Now, there is nothing wrong with you asking them to go into the shop. There's nothing wrong. They can say no. But most of us independent guys love that. Get your butt out here, Ron. Come on in. We're going to pull the tires and wheels and grab yourself a soda and come on out here with us. And because showing and explaining is believing, and we think that generates tremendous customer confidence. And if you pull the wheels both off the front and one off the back, you go, hey, Ron, you got another 10, 15, 20,000 miles on it, then that's a good deal. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. Ron, do you have a shop that you deal with?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So thank you for the information.
All right, you bet.
Thank you. Have a good day, Mark.
Uh-huh. Now, based on your customer the other day, mm-hmm, have we ever heard anybody do 180?
No. I mean, I remember somebody that had 200 and some too, but, I mean, it's in 39 years, that's pretty unusual.
And you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And they'll never get that amount again with a second set of pads.
No, that's not necessarily. I don't agree with that.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I don't think we've ever seen it on the second time.
Perhaps. But I'll tell you what Ron's doing. He's driving slow.
2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Or he's on the highway a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't brake really hard. He anticipates red lights. He's the consummate of a guy with a hot cup of coffee between his legs.
Mm-hmm.
He's driving that way. The cup is almost full of hot coffee, and he's driving that way, which is admirable.
That's right.
Okay, what did Gil say?
He said 1 minute.
Oh, so he wants me to break on.
He said 2 minutes.
So he wants me to break on time.
Yeah.
Oh, and I didn't explain to him. Top of the hour is 58:50.
Yes.
And then I come back on about 3 minutes after the top of the hour. Then I'm 20 is my, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah,
I can do whatever
you usually do.
And I usually do.
Yes.
So they would like me to break at 20, but I can do 26, 27. I can do 19 or 18. Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But we're at the 40 break right now. Okay.
Gil might care because he's sitting there waiting for you to take a break.
Gil is without a doubt the best engineer I've ever worked at since 1988.
Mm-hmm.
He, there is nothing that get him flustered. He's never said a bad word to me in my headphones. He's never not talked to me. I'd come in.
The station's on fire, but don't worry about it.
But Gil is he's one of the best engineers, producers mm-hmm. I've ever had. Mm-hmm. So, and he'll say in my ear, 1 minute.
Yes.
And that causes my eyes to go to the clock and, you know, but he's not gonna, he's gonna do that to the 20-40 break, but those are flexible.
Okay.
Okay. The top and the bottom are not. Mm-hmm. But just for you, I'm gonna hit the 40, okay? 602-508-0960. Get your clocks ready, cause in 15 seconds, it's turning 40. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Okay, we have a bulletin. Beep, 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 beep. Okay, Leanne has been texting my wife. She doesn't have my phone number, thank God. But she wants to give out her phone number. She's 68 years old. She's single. She's pretty. And so it's 1-800-LONESOME-LEANNE.
Oh, my goodness. Stop
it. 1-800-LONESOME-LEANNE. Now, if you really want to hook up with her, then mark at marksalem.com, and I will become the dating service.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Love, as you always call yourself.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Just call me Dr. Love. All right. I've got time for a couple more callers. 602-508-0960. Nick, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a Z3, and I have a steering wheel problem. It locks up on me when I start the engine, and it happens infrequently. Like it may happen in the morning when I start it, or even if I go to pick up the mail, I turn my engine off, and then I try to restart it again, the wheel locks.
Okay, so it'll turn, but with tremendous effort.
Yeah, I have to shake it around,
okay.
And then it releases itself.
Okay, I'm going to guess and say that you really have a power steering problem. I'm going to guess.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to guess that I think that you have a bad power steering belt or the fluid's low. Because both of those would cause intermittently the steering works perfectly like it's power steering, and then it goes to manual steering, which takes a huge guy with big ape arms to turn. So the
right.
steering column itself, I've never seen one seize up. But your symptoms, I might add, well said, your symptoms would indicate to me that either the power steering belt is slipping, and once it warms up, it quits slipping, or your power steering is low on fluid or has some problem in the pump. So that should be an easy one to diagnose.
Why do you think it happens frequently? I mean, it happens infrequently.
I know, but...
And I can't track it, because I can't figure out when it's going to happen.
Okay, but that's okay. A good senior guy like myself can look at the fan belt, look at the fluid, and come to a conclusion pretty quick. I think you did a good job, but here's the answer. Intermittently, my power steering goes from power steering to I need huge arms to turn the wheel. and that's all. Now, whether that's true or not, it's going to tell them what they need to look for. So, and you know, okay. you're different, you know, then the women come in and give us the symptoms. I mean, they don't tell us how to fix their car. Men, 50% of them come in and tell us how to fix their car, and 50% of the time they're wrong. So I'm gonna tell you something. I am 75% to 85% sure that it's either gonna be a power steering fluid problem or it's gonna be the belt, one or the other. That's it. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
And same to you, Nick. Thank you very much. What did Leanne say? 1-800-LONESOME.
She's not texting me anymore because she doesn't want any more stuff.
Yeah. and this is my son's mother-in-law.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's married to her daughter, and my goodness, that must have been a drunk night that night. All right, who we got next?
It.
We have Mike.
Mike. I get in trouble for stuff like that. I don't even care.
You're just
what's
crossing
Leanne
the line
beat
today.
Me up?
Huh? No, I'm
Mike.
Not worried about her.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a 202 Ford Explorer that a couple of years ago I had to put a new gas pump in. And so I just took it over to AAA because I'm a AAA member, and I thought I'd be buying this here in North Scottsdale. After a few months, I get this little check your engine light off. So So I take it back, and they say, oh, it's leaking, and they ground the gas tank.
Okay, stop for a minute. Stop for a minute. I need you to get off speakerphone because we're having a tough time with you. But I need you to just quickly tell us, tell us quickly what you said at the first, and then I understand you took it to AAA and you have a code. So, but what did you say first? You had something done?
Something replaced.
Yeah, what did you replace?
I have to have the gas pump replaced.
What?
So they put a new gas pump in the gas tank, right?
Oh, it's fuel the pump.
Fuel pump. Okay.
Fuel pump.
There we go.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so and you have a code, and AAA says what?
So they say, oh, you've got a leak. You know, they do the little smoke test, and it's back on the area where they apparently fixed the fuel pump. And then they fix it, and I get through emissions, and then about a year or so later, I get this code again. So I take it over to a different place near my home, and they go, oh, well, it looks like somebody used liquid weld or something to seal up this area around the gas pump to stop it from leaking. And I said, oh, geez, you know, it's going to cost me a few $100 or whatever to fix it there. I said, well, can you just put some more weld on it, and it'll get me through emissions, right? So they did that, and of course, it starts leaking again. So anyway, I'm wondering if AAA was behind all of this for workmanship. Is it worth pursuing with them, or are they just going to take a hike and forget about it?
Okay. I don't know what the time frame is, but it sure sounds like that the time frame was well past any kind of warranty.
Right.
You only have a choice here. One is you need to take the sending unit out and replace it. That's mm-hmm. all there is to it. You can JB weld all you want, but you're already a witness to the fact that that doesn't typically work. Now, what you're talking about is the vent line. Because if mm-hmm. if you had the feed line from the fuel pump sending high pressure fuel forward, then the truck wouldn't or car wouldn't run. So this is the vapor line. So we're sucking the fumes off the tank and we're burning them again. So this vapor line's broken. And you know, I wish I could see it, but I can't. But I think you should just replace the sending unit. Now it is possible that this vapor line is somewhere else on the tank. And it broke flush with the tank, and everybody's trying to glue it.
Mm-hmm.
You got a couple of choices there. They make a flange that you can screw to the top of the tank. It's metal, and then you can hook the hose to the metal part. But I would think that that's not what you want. You might have to buy a fuel tank. It just depends on where this hose is connected. Is it connected to the sending unit, or is it connected to the tank itself? And that's what you have to do. All righty? That's the best I can offer you.
Love your show. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you very much. You know, sometimes if I don't have anything nice to say, I just shut the heck up.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just shut the heck up. I think I would be really disappointed if my guys broke the thing, put in the fuel pump in, and then they JB welded it.
Yep.
I think I'd be really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be willing, they might offer, knowing how I feel, to just go ahead and pull the tank and fix it, or, you know,
sure.
And do the labor if, you know, some, and the shop's going to, if it could be proven, the shop's going to end up putting a tank in it or a sending unit in, mm-hmm. if it's all JB welded, there's no question at that.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's just unfortunate.
That it took so long for him to realize that it was going to leak again and how right. they, and that he didn't even know in the first place that that's what they did or how they fixed it.
And what they fixed it and then it broke, and then he had the check engine light on because the evaporative system is now down,
mm-hmm.
and then they found it at the back.
Right.
And so you add smoke to the front. Folks, we have a machine that makes very heavy, dense white smoke. So it would be no different than if you took an inner tube and you filled it up with smoke and you're looking for a leak. Wherever the leak would be at, that's white smoke would come out. And that's why they went back to the tank, is you inject smoke underneath the hood to the appropriate circuits,
mm-hmm.
and then you look for smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Surround the car with all your technicians, and sooner or later somebody's going, hey, it's back here, or hey, it's over here. So that's kind of how it works. That's why we do a smoke test, is because we can see actually where the leak is at.
Mm-hmm.
But that costs money, too.
Sure.
And it takes a lot of cigarettes to get that thing all lit up with smoke.
And hopefully they didn't charge him for that, since they were the ones that had done it. But
well, and to be honest with you, it's not a bad idea that he go back to them with his receipt.
Right.
Because it's the pump may not be under warranty, but defective workmanship, that's a real gray area. Does that follow, if you screw up a customer's car, does that follow the warranty?
Mm-hmm.
Or does that there is no time frame?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'll give you an example. I practice what I preach.
Okay.
We had a lady that had this little, what was that, Mary's car?
Mini Cooper.
Mini Cooper. And she brought it in, and it had a fan belt off of it, so we replaced the fan belt. And then she brought it back in, and it had the same fan belt, and we replaced it again.
Mm-hmm.
Then she got, she was at her son's place, which is up near Payson, and it blew the belt again.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, clearly, something's wrong.
Right.
So I said, I want you to take it to Beyer Motor Works in
mm-hmm.
Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
So Beyer calls her and says, the alternator, that's this fancy-dancy alternator that has a clutch, and it knows when to energize and give power. It's something that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But this little Mini Cooper has this. And the repair was $1,400.
Yeah, because I think we had done a pulley as well. We had done the belt and the pulley. And sometimes it would go 10 miles, and sometimes it would go 1,000 miles in between these belts. But it was just so random.
And we thought our workmen, that's why we warrantied it
right.
The second time.
Mm-hmm.
But I practice what I preach. And I told Mary, look it. We know that we never fixed this.
Mm-hmm.
We now know what the problem is. We've learned from that. So I went down to Beyer Motor Works, and I gave him $500 and some odd, and I said, put this towards Mary's $1,400 bill.
Right.
So we paid $512 or something like that.
For whatever work we had done.
That's right.
Yeah.
We gave it all back to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is we look back and we go, wow. Now, the pulley had burn marks all over it because the alternator had froze up, but the belt continued to rotate around the pulley. Then the belt gets hot, melts, and breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So we replaced the pulley, but we didn't really look past the pulley.
Right.
And the guys would spin the alternator. Oh, it spins good. It feels good.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't understand that this is a very sophisticated alternator that has some computer operation of it. So the computer says, give me some electricity, and then now coast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the problem.
Yeah.
So I practice what I preach. Okay. I raise my hand when it's our fault.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Automotive, or actually automatic transmission exchange, has been around the Phoenix area for a very long time. I don't know when he started, but it was in the late 60s. Phil's a great guy, and he understands the fundamentals. And regardless of what people have told you, if you understand the fundamentals of mechanical transmissions and fluid transmissions, you can easily transfer that knowledge to the new electronics, because the difference is how we make it shift. So it can be pressure, it can be throttle, or it can be vacuum, or it can be the computer saying to the car, open solenoid 1 and close solenoid 2, and now we're in second gear. So if you have a transmission problem, no matter what it is, don't go in there on a Monday morning or Friday night, but you can take it over to Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, and they'll take a ride with you. If you can make it happen, they'll take a ride. And if you have a leak, they'll lift it up in the air and show you where the leak is at. So they're at 40th Street in Washington. They've been around since Jesus was a baby. When you look at Phil, you'll know that he's a gray-haired guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows cars.
Yes.
So if you're in Phoenix and you have a transmission problem, my suggestion would be easy. Go see Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Okay, you got anything else you want to share with people that doesn't involve me or an embarrassment for me?
Oh, no. The only thing I can think of is you. If I held your hands, you probably wouldn't be able to talk because you are quite animated back here. It's kind of funny to watch.
You know what I got to say? Goodbye. Yeah, now your mic is gone. Go ahead and yell as loud as you want. Okay, Renee decided to go to the bathroom and... And so she's not going to be here for the rest of the show. But I also want to remind you, when it comes to car repair, self-defense for car expense, and that's a saying that I've used for years and years, self-defense for car expense is you. For instance, if you have an oil leak, I want to see it. Is it bad to leak? I want to look at my floor in the garage. How come I'm not adding any oil? Now, if you have a bad oil leak, when you drive down the freeway, the oil goes underneath the car, coats the underside of the car, and then it swirls up at the back of your car. So if you come in and you got an oil leak, and we walk around the back of your car, and you got spots of oil and dust all over that oil, all over the back of your car, we know you got an oil leak. We know that. But if you don't have an, if they say you have an oil leak and it's real bad, and you don't have any spots of oil on the back of your car, and you drive on the freeway every now and then, there's a problem there, and you're not adding any fluid. You're not adding brake fluid, power steering fluid, transmission fluid, engine oil. You're not adding anything. Those are the kinds of issues that, and then if you tell them, write down what I need, write down the out-the-door estimate, OTD, out-the-door estimate, and then just staple your business card to it. That separates the men from the boys. That's it, because if they're lying to you, then they're not going to want to sign their name, they're not going to want to give you their business card, and they're not going to write down what they're telling you. So that's kind of how you do it, is take care of yourself. And the default is thank you very much, write it down, let me have time to digest this.
And get a second opinion.
But you can't do it over the phone. You got to take it someplace and say to them, would you check and see if I have an oil leak? You don't tell them what the other shop said. You just say, check and see if I have an oil leak. Okay, Mark Salem at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com.